Salutations to Durga, the one who is difficult to conquer. Durga, who takes us through difficulties, who is the creator and indwelling essence of all, who is right knowledge. We bow to Durga, who is at once most gentle and most fierce. When you need the strength to break through obstacles, when there's something you have to do that demands the fiercest form of compassion, Durga is the goddess to call in for help. She's the fierce warrior mother, the form of the goddess who stands up for justice and inner freedom. And when you meditate on Durga, she fills you with the power to speak truth. Durga's sword creates a force field around us that can protect us both from external danger and from the subtle difficulties of the mind. And she's both a warrior and a mother. She's queenly, filled with regal radiance, and yet she's a martial artist to her core. She's fierce and implacable, but she's also the source of deep ecstasy. It's Durga who saves the world when nobody else can do it. And she is the goddess who comes to you when nothing else can help. All the goddesses in the pantheon are her daughters, and yet she's ever young. For a contemporary woman, she personifies liberation and strength. It's her energy that empowers the lawyer fighting for justice. She acts within the soldier. She speaks through an executive running a corporation. She's the mother defending her children. And when you bring Durga into your inner world, she can give you the strength to achieve your most radical aspirations, and she can guide you as you make hard choices. Here's a story about Durga's power. It's a story about her encounters with two demon brothers named Shumba and Nishumba, who were fighters for the dark side. In Indian mythology, the battle between the light forces and the dark side is personified as the eternal struggle between two races of elemental beings. The forces of light are known as the devas. Deva means shining one, and they're sometimes called the power gods. Their ancient enemies are the asuras, the anti-gods. And both of these races wear bodies of light and thought. They use weapons powered by the force of secret mantras. They live in pleasure realms with jeweled streets. They're beautiful. And the difference between the devas and the asuras is simply the difference in their motivation. The devas are servants of the divine, and in human beings they represent our higher self, the qualities of love, of fearlessness, of compassion, of discernment. All these are the qualities of your devic energy. Whereas the asuras are the qualities of egoic greed, of anger run out of control, of accumulation and conquest. And of course, we recognize the asuric energies because they're very prevalent in the modern world. They show up in our contemporary culture as kleptocratic dictators, corrupt corporate actors, terrorists, financial manipulators. But just as we carry devic energy in the higher self, we also hold our own asuric energy. And the asuric energy is our negative shadow, our pride, our arrogance, cutthroat ambition, loveless lust, selfishness, hard-heartedness. So just as the devas use power for the protection of the good, the asuras are obsessed with power for their own sake. And as this tale unfolds, Shumba and Nishumba are demon brothers who've amassed an army of fighters with magical superpowers. And when they're ready to begin their campaign of world conquest, they do a ceremony of austerities that is designed to force the creator god Brahman to give them a boon. And they do terrific austerities, standing on one leg between five fires, reciting petitionary prayers for thousands of years. They invoke the cosmic law of karma, which says that so much effort has to be rewarded. So Brahma agrees to give these brothers a boon that they can never be conquered by a man or a god. And of course, there's a loophole in the boon. It says nothing about a goddess. So now that the demon warriors are more or less invincible, they declare themselves the rulers of the upper and lower worlds. They throw the gods out of their celestial abode. They enslave the earth. And then they become connoisseurs of art and beauty. They build magnificent palaces. They bring together all the beautiful women in the world. They commission artists to create paintings and sculpture for them. They study all the most subtle arts, the most subtle forms of knowledge. And in the meantime, the forces of good in the world have become small and powerless, and there's sadness in the heavens and in the realms of human beings. So then one day, as the earth is groaning under the burden of these demonic powers, a sage comes to see the king of the gods, Indra, to point out the loophole in the brothers' protection guarantee. And he reminds them that though no man or god can defeat these brothers, nobody said anything about a goddess. So he tells them, go to the abode of Durga, the supreme goddess. Beg her to appear in the world. So at last, the gods travel to the goddess's mountain abode, and they array themselves on their knees, singing hymns of praise and begging her to appear to them. At last, the air shimmers with an unmistakable force, sweet and fierce, and Durga appears out of the air, glistening dark with blue-black skin and lustrous hair, her light form clothed in robes whose colors shift and slip, revealing and concealing her body. An erotic perfume surrounds her, and she rides a lion. O Durga, O Ma, says Indra, king of the gods, come to our help. Our world is in ruins, and no one but you can save us. And with this, the goddess smiles. Within a moment, she has transported herself to the garden of the demon kings, and you can imagine her as she sits on her lion outside the demon's palace, her silken skirts brushing the grass, flowers dripping from her fingers, clouds forming and dissolving in her hair. She is beauty personified, sensuality clothed in form. And the moment the demon kings see her, looking out their window, spying her on the outskirts of the garden, they're infatuated. They send their master of ceremonies to invite her to come into the palace and join their harem. You'll be the queen of the harem, the maitre d' tells her. You're the most beautiful woman in all the world, and the demon kings adore you already. The goddess smiles. I would like nothing better, she says. But in my youth, I made a vow that I would only marry a man who could defeat me in battle. So I must ask your masters to come and fight me. I'm sorry, she said. It's a silly vow, I know, but family honor must be maintained. The maitre d' laughs, and he saunters back to the demon kings, who are impatiently awaiting their first moment with the goddess, and tells them what she said. The demon kings think this is completely ridiculous, so they send the maitre d', the major domo, back to persuade her, but the goddess will have none of it. So in the next hours, the demons send a small force of arms, then a larger army, and finally their entire force against the goddess. And with her spear, with the cut of her sword, with the touch of her mace, she destroys army after army after army, until finally the demons send their most fearsome general, who brings an army of demon warriors who have the power to rearm themselves, to reappear out of every drop of blood that is shed on the field of battle. And at the moment when this demon army appears, the goddess Kali emerges from the goddess's forehead. The goddess Kali is utterly terrifying. She has a long tongue, a hag-like form, She carries a sword, and she begins to lick up the blood of the demon warriors and slice through their heads with her sword. And in a moment, the field is cleared. Now, the two demon kings come out to fight her themselves. And they bring with them an army of demon warriors such as the world has never seen. And as they array themselves before the goddess's heart opens, and a host of little goddesses comes pouring forth, some of them riding swans, others riding eagles. And they move among the demon hosts, and with their celestial weapons, they destroy everyone. So now Shumba and Nishumba, the demon brothers, are alone. Nishumba calls out, "Goddess," for now they know who they're facing, "you promised us that you would fight us alone, but instead you had all these helpers." And the goddess says, "Ah, but they are simply powers of myself." And with a wave of her arm, she summons the goddesses back into her body and steps forth astride her lion to fight the demons hand to hand. And after a battle which takes them up into the skies, down to the center of the earth, both the demons lie dead at her feet. And as they die, the demons' lips curve in ecstasy, and their dying words, as they dissolve into her body, are "Ma, Ma." So, what is this story about Durga as the demon slayer? The first thing to understand is that as a world protector, Durga's fierceness arises out of her uniquely potent compassion. She's the strong compassion of the feminine, and when she acts in our inner worlds, and of course this battle is ultimately the battle between the force of the transformative Shakti within us and all the intransigent forces of the darker side of our ego. So the battle between Durga and the demons is the inner struggle that begins when we undertake real transformative practice. Like the demon king with his austerities, the ego enters into practice with its own agenda. Ego seeks control, control over our circumstances, control over the body. Power and mastery are always what matters to the ego. So naturally, the ego resists surrendering to the higher powers, and it resists in very clever ways. But the evolutionary Shakti, symbolized by Durga, wants to move us away from egocentric consciousness to the recognition of our non-difference from each other in the cosmos. And to do this, she puts the ego in its place and ultimately dissolves it. So although there are goddesses, as you'll see, whose way is to gently and lovingly untie the knots of our ego, when we're battling with really tough aspects of our shadow self, we need the sword of Durga, the sword of the fierce Shakti. So, just as the gods represent the higher self, the uniquely personal qualities of essence, when Durga arrives in our inner world, as she dissolves the primitive and intransigent qualities of ego, she also strengthens the forces of the higher self. And she'll do this in every way that we need. She's, in other words, the deity to call on when you're in deep trouble, when you're confused and uncertain, when you're in crisis. And she promises to move mountains to rescue us from every form of sorrow and darkness, including the darkness in our own mind.